Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome to episode 549. It's from the Best Of series. It was originally aired in the first year of our podcast in 2011. My guest is Danielle Koenig. We will be back in August with new episodes. As always, our sponsor this week is BetterHelp.com, online counseling. If you've never tried online counseling, why wouldn't you? Why not do it from the comfort of your own home? Just go to betterhelp.com/mental. Make sure you include the slash mental part so they know you came from the podcast, and then just fill out a questionnaire. And if they have a counselor that they think is a good fit for you, they will match you up with one and you can experience a free week of counseling and see if it's your thing. I can tell you it is my thing. I've been doing it for several years now and I find it very, very helpful and I enjoy the service. So check it out, betterhelp.com/mental. Welcome to episode 16 with my guest, Danielle Koenig. I'm Paul Gilmartin. This is the Mental Illness Happy Hour, an hour of honesty about all the battles in our heads, from medically diagnosed conditions to everyday compulsive negative thinking, feelings of dissatisfaction, disconnection, inadequacy, and that vague sinking feeling that the world is passing us by. You give us an hour or so, and we will give you a hot ladle of awkward and icky. But first, a few notes. Please go check out the website, mentalpod.com. You can fill out a survey there. You can post stuff in the forum. And something I'd really like you to do is leave voicemail messages for me. I've set up a Skype account. My Skype name is MentalPod if you want to go Skype to Skype. Or if you just want to make a phone call, the number to call is 818-574-7177. And you can leave a voicemail for me. You can leave a comment or a question or a fear. One of the things that I'm trying to do is get a bunch of people's fears on voicemail, and then I want to put them to music. I think that might be kind of fun. So yeah, if you leave a voicemail for me, though, know that it there's a possibility it may wind up being played publicly, either on the show or on a song that gets played outside the show or someplace else. So you can always, if you want to contact me privately, you can always send me an email through the website. But speaking of voicemail, I got a voicemail just before I edited this this episode together about an hour ago, from a guy named Philip from Davis, California, and he wants to know what to do because his girlfriend is suicidal, and he is asking me for advice. And I emailed him back because he gave me his email on the voicemail. And I basically said, I have no idea. I'm not an expert. I don't have answers to a lot of the stuff that we talk about on this program. But what I do know is that a mental health professional would be a good person for you to talk to. I like to think of this show as the waiting room outside of a psychiatrist's office. Yeah, it's cool to talk about stuff that's going on with us, but nobody's an expert here. I mean, for the last 23 years, I've made a living in comedy clubs, babysitting drunks, telling dick jokes.
Everybody I know is bizarrely, beautifully fucked up in some weird way.
I couldn't stand you in the audition.
I couldn't stand you.
Yes, yeah. Awful. Yeah. I was drunk.
And I learned that I could solve my problems.
And said.
Through violence, since I couldn't communicate.
Lonely?
Yes. I'm afraid that my genitalia is ugly.
That's hurtful.
And what was your role in the robbery?
I mean, you never knew what you were going home to.
I had a jar that had teeth in it.
I was a wreck.
Other people's teeth?
Yeah.
I'm here with my friend Danielle Koenig at her lovely house in Los Angeles. Those of you that know my friend Jimmy Pardo, Jimmy has been married to Danielle for how long has it been?
7 years.
7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have talked many times about the fact that we both live with depression.
Yeah.
And
because you know it's good times.
It's fun when a party slows down. You like to say, hey, when was the last time you stared at a bare bulb for 2 hours and thought about what might have been?
Let's go into a corner somewhere and depress each other.
But you know, one of the things that I've always enjoyed about you, A, your sense of humor, but B, your honesty about your depression. And so
Yeah, I don't have any shame about it.
That's great.
I mean, maybe that wasn't always the case, but
yeah,
I don't have any hang-ups with.
That's good. A lot of people are so embarrassed to admit that they need any kind of help or
right.
take meds or go to therapy.
Right.
And that to me is usually the sign that you need therapy.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
know.
If you're not comfortable.
Yeah,
am I
jumping the gun there by assuming that if you're
yeah.
that anxious about what people think that you might need to go to therapy?
Well, I'm for sure anxious about what people think, but not
right.
about that particular
yeah.
thing. Like,
yeah. Do you think that's because we're in the entertainment field and it's kind of accepted that we're all a little nuts?
I think it's because perhaps, or because just like my whole family suffers from it, so I'm just so used to it.
Right.
Although I can remember like dating guys and hiding my Prozac from them. So I guess at one time I was a little bit
right.
like, and I remember one boyfriend saying, oh, so how's the Prozac going? Like he saw my bottle.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay. And then it was no big deal, but I guess there's still a little bit of a stigma, but
yeah.
I mean, there was, but no.
When did you start taking antidepressants?
A million years ago.
Before the dinosaurs?
Yes, because there weren't any other people around, so I was really bummed. I was really lonely.
Your alienation was actually based in reality.
For once, yes.
Yeah. In your cave, isolating, waiting for your period.
I just marked the days off on the wall. I didn't know what days were, but I thought when the big round thing goes down, then that's when I get sad. A long time ago, like 15 or 16 years ago, I guess.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I've gone on and off of them, but...
Right. Are you currently on them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't have crippling depression. I'm highly functional, which...
You have limping depression.
I have limping depression, which is sometimes... Now, this might be the dramatic person in me, the performer in me.
The ballerina.
But sometimes I wish they were more crippling so that I guess at times I wished like, oh, I wish someone could see what was going on and just help me because I was never the person who couldn't get out of bed or couldn't keep a job or
right.
I wasn't that person. So it was just a very solitary sort of a conversation I would have with myself.
Yes. You know, I'm glad you brought that up because I got an email from somebody and this person had been through a tornado and had PTSD, but was having trouble because nobody died in the tornado and the house was just destroyed and they weren't injured. This person was having a hard time allowing themselves to grieve
right.
and to say, I've been harmed mentally by this. And so I started a thread on the forum about the danger of minimizing things that have happened to you. And I shared that for a long time, when I was 11, there was a 15-year-old kid in our neighborhood that molested everybody he could get his hands on, including me. And
oh my God, I didn't know
that. It wasn't I minimized it probably up until a year or two ago because it wasn't like the molestation that you see about.
It wasn't a bad enough molestation.
Exactly.
Yeah, you weren't anally penetrated, so
exactly.
therefore you can't
exactly.
cry about it.
Right? It was touching and in a, you know. And somebody helped me point out, they said, what's important is the feelings that you had around this. What are the feelings? And I said, well, I felt shame. Yeah. I felt kind of dirty. I felt manipulated and I felt used and I felt uncomfortable every time I saw that person for the next 15 years.
Oh my God.
And so I thought, yeah, you know what? I can call it a molestation. And
it is.
It is. But for the longest time, I felt like, oh, that was just a kid who was fucked up on our block.
No.
He wasn't that much older than me. He was 15. I was 11.
Yeah.
But no, you know what? It was. He, you know.
Did you ever talk to anyone else on the block who, you said everyone.
Well, the way I found out was there was another kid on our block who had a nervous breakdown. And my mom said, when this kid was in the hospital, he admitted or it said to his mom, I'm really having trouble, you know, this event happened to me. And so my mom called me and said, did this kid do anything to you?
Oh, she did.
Yes. And I said, yes. And my mom's really good friends with his mom.
So were you an adult at the time?
I like how this has become all about me
now. No. That's kind of what I do. But I'm interested. Like, I always ask the thousand questions. So.
Right.
Were you an adult when you told your mother?
Yeah, this was like 5 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And that's crazy.
Yeah, but I want to get back to the point about the minimizing what's happened to you. So talk a little bit about what it's like in your mind when you feel like maybe you're wishing that your depression was more beyond...
Right.
Well, not in that nebulous zone where you're like, I don't know whether or not to take this seriously. Am I wrong? Is that what you're kind of...
I guess that's part of it. I think I'm what they call low-grade. Mm-hmm. Low-grade depression.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just been so consistent through my life that it's just been... I guess I just thought it was my personality.
Right.
In other words, like, this is kind of shitty things happen to me, and I'm negative, and I'm pessimistic, and all those things are true.
Mm-hmm.
But... it didn't help that I probably have a chemical, you know, and at least I'm sure hereditary sort of design to be that way. And also I wasn't shown how to not be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I remember the specific time when I first went to therapy was that I was living by...
How old were you?
I guess 19 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living by myself in my, you know, first apartment, my little studio apartment. And supposedly with my whole life ahead of me and sitting on the ground, like in front of my bed and just staring into space and...
Oh my God, do I know that feeling?
Yeah, and really kind of getting scared. And then I remember, I don't know how long after, maybe a day or so, maybe a week, I don't know, being at my parents' house and just kind of... breaking down and telling them, like, this is not good. I'm not doing well. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got into therapy.
What was the feeling that you had? Was it of paralysis, difficulty in making decisions, feeling negative about the future?
I sort of think that the negative about the future thing was sort of always there.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely I still feel paralysis. I feel like I never lived up to my potential. I realized this, that as a kid, I was always worried that I wasn't living up to my potential. Mm-hmm. And I still feel like that. But then, you know what? Maybe I am living up to my potential, and this is as far as it goes. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, maybe I'm not as, you know, I have as much potential as I thought. But so I'm sort of getting all over the place. But so it was just a feeling of, like, not knowing. Yeah. I don't know what to do. I feel empty. Mm-hmm. I feel disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have hope, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's the worst feeling, that feeling that you don't have hope and that you're never going to get out of it.
Right.
And that this is the way you are and you're fucked and that's how you're going to be for the rest of your life.
I think I just thought that I was wired that way. And I do think that to some extent, like, I'm still not, like, healed. I'm not, like, the most positive person in the world, but I definitely have changed since.
And it's not a prison. It's not a death sentence. But if you don't do anything about it and you just try to go to your own mind to fix it, I think it is a prison.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
my brother, I mean, I can talk about it, but
yeah.
So my brother killed himself last year
And your brother Andrew.
My brother Andrew. And definitely he was in a prison. I mean, mm-hmm. he definitely felt hopeless. I know that's what it was. There was mm-hmm. there was no hope. There was mm-hmm. no getting out of it for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been on meds, but then he stopped. Mm-hmm. And
did you know that he had stopped?
You know what's really shameful is that I never asked him. I never, because he had such a history of being up and down and up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I never thought of was that he was probably bipolar, but mm-hmm. I just never thought of it. I just thought he was depressed.
Right.
So, but anyway, I had been so used to him being up and down that the fact that he was down didn't trigger in me, oh, he's off his meds. Mm-hmm. I just thought this is him because he was so severely depressed. Do you right. know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I will always probably feel guilty about that I didn't, you know, say like, hey, what's going on? Because I was so, it just seemed like this is the pattern of his life. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, how, first of all, I think it's completely natural that you would go to that place to want to blame yourself or to feel guilty. I think that's natural.
I think it's inevitable.
Inevitable, but I hope you realize how completely wrong that is, right. There's nothing that you could have done.
Most of me understands that
okay.
intellectually, that there's nothing I could have done. But that's even sort of more frustrating. Like, I keep peppering my therapist with questions about like, well, what if, not what if I had done this, but like, well, what if he had been more successful? Would he still have killed himself because that was in his brain? Or would, mm-hmm. or that, like, how much of it was circumstantial and how much of it was, mm-hmm. you know, physiological or yeah. chemistry?
Let's look at that for a second. And I'm assuming there's going to be people listening to this podcast that have had people close to them take their lives. What are some of the questions that you ask yourself, like that you
right.
pose to your therapist, so people know that they're not alone and feeling that, oh, I could have done something.
Right. I say things like, it's not that I'm under the impression I could have done something,
right.
but I feel like, oh, I wish I could have said goodbye. Mm-hmm. I wish I could have, you know, talked to him one last time, or just mm-hmm. like I've, you know, had dreams for a long time and still occasionally about, you know, well, I guess the dreams are sort of about stopping him. But in my conscious time, I don't think like, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that much, except for because I know that when I did try to talk to him, it was very difficult.
Yeah.
So it's not like I never tried. Mm-hmm. We all tried. It's yeah. just when you're talking to someone in that state, I'm not a professional. I'm not.
Right.
I'm not hyper intelligent. I don't mm-hmm. know what I'm supposed to say or do. So,
and plus people in that state, I think if they're like I feel, you don't want to be around people. That's the catch 22
yeah.
of depression is
yes.
you want to isolate. You want to go in a corner
right.
like a dog that's getting ready to die and just lick your wounds and not have anybody
right.
touch you and just stare at that bare light bulb for 2 hours
right.
and replay your life and think that you're going to find the answer mm-hmm. there or
right.
in some thought about the future that's going to save your life. And
right.
in reality, that's the quicksand in,
yeah.
in our mind. The path to safety
mm-hmm.
is doing that thing of getting out of our comfort zone and talking to somebody and saying, hey, I'm feeling really hopeless. I'm feeling
right.
really scared right now. I'm feeling like the world is passing me by.
He had, you know, talked to me over the years about that in certain ways, but I just didn't know, other than recommending therapy and
mm-hmm.
medication, which he didn't take until later, much later.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know what else to say.
Yeah.
I did see that his life wasn't working out the right way, so I couldn't be like, oh, you're crazy. You have everything. He didn't have everything.
Right.
He was severely lacking in his
yeah.
life, and yeah. I can't get in his brain. And I, as much as I've suffered depression, it was not to that extent,
mm-hmm.
so I can't pretend to understand exactly what that is. I was going to say
something. Well, let me throw this thought out at you. I have a lot of friends in recovery from drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them sometimes go back to drinking and using,
mm-hmm.
knowing that it's the worst thing in the
right.
world for them. And you can sit down, and I've had conversations with people and told them, look,
this is what's going to happen.
This is what's going to happen. This is, you're not unique. You are going to die if you don't get help. If you go try to do this on your own, you're going to die. Statistically, that's what happened. And I have had friends die.
Really? Go,
yes, because they are reaching out to another person, talking about their fears, talking about, you know, their pain is more painful to them than the possibility of dying. That is worse to them. So the reason I bring that up to you is, even if you had said things to Andrew, there's also a good chance that wouldn't have done anything. Because if people don't want to get... He knew he was depressed.
Right. Well, and all his friends, you know, did try to talk to him.
Yeah.
It's not like it was a hidden thing where, oh, this guy seems so happy-go-lucky. I mean, everyone was aware. He wasn't shy about it. But, and then the other thing, the other guilt thing is that it was hard to be around him sometimes.
Yeah.
And so I probably didn't make myself as available as I could have. And, you know, I have a little boy, and maybe I use that as an excuse, but it was just, it was difficult being around someone who's depressed. I mean, you know it as someone who's been depressed, and being around other people, it can be very difficult. You feel helpless because you don't know what to say after a while. And
they're a drag to be around.
They're a drag to be around. And there was just always tension. And I was never 100% myself with my brother. I mean, I just wasn't. I was not always
comfortable. Felt like you were walking on eggshells?
For sure felt like I was walking on eggshells, which I do magnificently, by the way. I've taken that to a new level.
You actually have eggshell shoes you wear. They almost look like ballerina shoes.
I know, right? And then they crunch. What I realized is you have to cook the eggs first, or else it makes a mess.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I am the queen of walking on eggshells. So, like, which is not a good thing. I really wish I were much more authentic and, like, confrontational, but I don't want people to be upset or... So, it was sort of not a good combination. And also, there was just, in general, there was just some tension because... We're very different people. I mean, we loved each other and we liked to hang out. We would have fun, but we were very different people. And yeah, it was hard to be around him.
And you know what? I think it's okay to need a break from people that are mentally ill, because they're a fucking handful.
It's draining.
It's draining.
And when they're related to you, you don't feel like you can just cut them off.
Right.
You know, and I didn't have any desire to just cut them off, but... It was difficult.
I mean, yeah. I have a friend who does not want to get help, but wants an audience to talk about stuff. And at a certain point, I have to pull away because I'm not, it's abusive to your friends to dump on them and yet not want to get help on your own.
It's like someone who complains about being in an abusive relationship, but they don't get out, and you're like, well, what can I do for you?
The best thing I think you can do is say, hey, listen, I have done all I can do, and at this point, it's just frustrating to me, and it feels unhealthy.
Right.
And so
what is the reason for not wanting to get help?
I think pride. See, I think a lot of people...
This is the part I just don't understand. I guess because my family is so comfortable with depression and not being perfect, that it's so hard for me to understand that you would rather sit by yourself feeling the worst you've ever felt than take a pill or talk to someone who can help you. I just wish I had more. I had more empathy for it, but for some people, I
think it's the unknown. They haven't tried that yet.
Right, but what could be worse than where you are? That's what I just don't understand.
Well, I think the thing too is addiction and depression and all these other things. One of their common manifestations is they warp reality.
Yeah.
And so you think in your mind, oh, it's going to be this. It's going to be this. And so you have these distorted fantasies of how horrible it's going to be, and it's never. as bad right. as you think it's going to be. In fact, it's usually really life-affirming and liberating and mm-hmm. freeing, but if you never if right. you never get help and never try that, you know.
I guess it's also just culturally some people are, you know.
They think it's weak.
They think it's weak or they think, yeah. I mean, I definitely, I guess I thought that about taking drugs, like, oh, is this...
Am I cheating
or something? But the fact is, once I took them and realized, oh, this doesn't...
This just makes me normal.
It doesn't make me a happy-go-lucky person.
Doesn't make me euphoric
at all.
It gives me the chance to be euphoric.
Right, right. But it in no way made me, like, some false sense of floating on air. I mean, I still feel everything I feel. It's just not paralyzing.
Right.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
And I guess I wish people would understand that. I mean, I'm sure there are some drugs, or if you have the wrong, you know... prescription or amount or something.
I think like Valium and stuff like that are incredibly dangerous. And for years they were prescribed for people with depression, which is like putting gas on a fire.
Yeah, that's funny. Valium for depression, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not like doing coke or something. I think that's what people think. It's like, oh, I'm going to get this unnatural high.
Yeah.
But, you know, I should have such a high. I've never.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot on this. This.
So I'm just treading old territory. Is that what you're telling me?
No, but I'm glad you bring it up because it's a point that I don't think can be made often enough because a lot of people do think of it that way, that, oh, it's going to be cheating. Yeah. One of the things I emailed you before we did this was to try to think of some snapshots from your life that you think are kind of seminal.
Yes. The first thing I thought of was driving to SeaWorld with my dad. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it was just the two of us, but for some reason...
Is it okay to say who your dad is?
Sure, yeah. Okay. I mean, they're going to look it up anyway, I guess.
Danielle's father is Walter Koenig, who played
Chekhov
on the original Star Trek.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's fairly open about his... Well, as much as he recognizes them. Mm-hmm. So... We were driving to...
The beauty is that the parents and older people don't even know how to download a podcast, so...
That's true. That's true. But he's on Facebook. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we were driving to SeaWorld, which is in San Diego, from Los Angeles, and...
How old were you?
Boy, I want to say like 8. Mm-hmm. We were driving, and he tells the story, and he thinks it's funny because he likes to make fun of himself. Mm-hmm. But the making fun of himself, like, he doesn't quite acknowledge that. I still don't think it's funny. Mm-hmm. But he was pointing to the sign. He goes, there it is. There's SeaWorld. He was pointing to the sign. And I said, where? I don't, because there were so many signs off the freeway. And I was a little kid. I didn't know which sign it was. And he was like, there. And I said, which one, Dad? I don't, there, it's that one. And he got really, like, frustrated with me that I didn't know which sign he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And that is... like a microcosm of my life, that I am afraid I'm not going to know the answer. I'm afraid of doing the wrong thing. I'm afraid of making someone mad because he has a very short temper. Mm-hmm. And
what would happen when he would lose his temper?
He would just yell. I mean, nothing was... It's not like I have horrific... It's kind of what you were saying before about like, oh, my stories aren't sad enough. Like,
right. It's the emotion that it generated.
Yes.
And
I just... It turned me into someone who... I'm not just saying that one incident or that it's all his responsibility, of course, but it's turned me into someone who is afraid to mess up, afraid to do the wrong thing. And as my therapist recently said to me, because I was trying to figure out why, she said, you don't have the I don't give a fuck gene. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how to just go, oh, fuck it. I don't care about most things, which is detrimental.
Yeah.
Because I don't really get outside my comfort zone as much as I would like to because I'm afraid of screwing up or the unknown or, you know, so I'm getting anxious talking about it. But
you're not going to talk about it in the perfect way.
What?
You're
not going to talk about it in the perfect way, right? Let me leave something out.
I'm not going to completely express myself.
Yes.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up too because one of the themes in the last couple of episodes has been the burden of perfectionism and how draining it is. And I'm beginning to think that perfectionism is really closely related to depression because I can have things that I enjoy doing and all of a sudden there's this feeling I have to do this so well
right.
that everybody goes, wow.
Right.
And then I think I'm not going to be able to do it to the point of wow for everybody.
Right.
And then I just work myself up into a nap.
Yes. Right. 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 Exactly. Yeah.
And you wonder, how could it go from this thing I was excited about
right.
a half hour ago to I'm standing staring at a bare light bulb thinking, why am I all of a sudden tired?
You need to get some lampshades is what I'm learning from this podcast. You need some fixtures, an electrician to come over and cover up those goddamn light bulbs. Because they are, you're like living in a...
I don't know why I go to the bare light bulb. I don't know why I go there.
But that's perfect because, okay, so my current job is that I write for Fashion Police on E!, Joan Rivers show.
Yeah. So, by the way, that's the other thing I forgot to do at the top of the show. Tell people stuff that you've written for and
okay.
things that they might know you're
from.
I for
sure didn't mean to like make it as a plug.
No. I always do that in every episode, and that's one of the reasons I should bring notes when I do it, but I'm
right.
too lazy.
Okay, so quickly, I used to write on The Dish, which was a sister show to The Soup. I wrote on it the entire time. It's now over, and now I just have this part-time job writing on Fashion Police, which is just basically just writing jokes for Joan Rivers. And so I can go in a day from feeling like I'm the shit because, oh my God, this legend wants me to write jokes for her to if I don't get a laugh when we pitch the jokes around the table, I'm a fraud. I know that's a cliche, but it's true. Like, this is ridiculous.
I've thought of my last funny joke.
Yeah. Yes.
I've got nothing left in me.
I've got nothing left. If they don't laugh at it, then it's not funny. And I've got nothing and I'm going to get fired. I thought last night, I was at the meeting, I'm going to get fired. I'm going to get fired. And then a few rounds, because we go in a circle pitching our jokes on each picture.
How do you know when you've gotten the disapproval of someone whose face doesn't move?
I mean, good point. She kind of shakes her head. Nothing moves on it. But she's very low-key. She doesn't give a lot away. But the atmosphere of the room is that people don't laugh at most things. Like, there's not...
That's most writers don't laugh at.
Well, I'm used to... I don't know. I guess I had a different situation on The Dish because we would all laugh at each other's stuff and then we'd add and we'd top and we'd but it's not that kind of collaborative process.
Right.
This is more like you pitch a joke, people don't really fix it. Occasionally that happens,
right.
but it's just very different from what I'm used to. So it's more like you pitch your joke and like you read all your jokes for one picture, then the next person reads all their jokes for that same picture.
I gotcha.
And then you go around. So I'm feeling like, okay, so one minute I'm getting fired. She's just gonna say, that girl is no good, get rid of her. I've thought this every time, by the way. And then like two rounds later, I have a huge laugh and
And you're the best writer in the room.
I'm the best writer in the world and she loves me and everything's great and you know,
I'm gonna get a spinoff from this show.
Yeah. Yes. I'm a 38-year-old who still needs the approval of, you know, everyone in the room, and I feel ridiculous. And so, yeah, it can change, like, it's...
And I wonder, is that projecting into the future, to me, I wonder why is it always that it's you're a peasant or you're a king?
Yeah.
You're never in between. There's never any moderation in the future. Is that a thing about artists and creative people or depressives, or is that just human?
You know what I think? I think there's nothing romantic about being in the middle.
Yeah.
It's not interesting.
Yeah.
It's either I'm the lowest of the low or I'm fantastic. Yeah, you're right. I think I actually do think I'm sort of in the middle. Like I don't think I'm a genius and I don't think I'm talentless, but there are times where I think both those things.
Right.
But mostly I don't.
Right.
Mostly I just... But, yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's just...
I remember this moment when I was about 10 years old and everybody else had kind of... maybe actually I was about 12 years old and all the other guys were starting to get into puberty and stuff and I wasn't growing. I was smaller than everybody else and I had problems with my body and I was ashamed of it.
Oh.
And I had glasses and I had friends and stuff. I wasn't lonely, but I felt like everybody was normal and I wasn't. And I remember one of our teachers had a Nova, the car, you know, remember the Novas?
Yeah.
And it looked to me like the most average car. There was nothing special about it. And I remember thinking, I want to be the Nova of people. I just want to
be. That was your aspiration.
Yes. I pictured myself as an adult driving a Nova and think, then I'll feel okay.
That's hysterical.
Yeah.
I just wrote a piece about how my aspirations are very like middle of the road. Like I just wanted to earn money doing something I liked. Yeah. Like that's it. Like I don't
think
have
that's great.
Yeah, but I think it. I do think it's good in a sense, but I also think I probably cut myself off a little bit by thinking like that, because people who think they're going to be movie stars either are they're all crazy and they either do it because they're crazy or they don't. Mm-hmm. And then everything's a big disappointment.
Right.
You know, I didn't want to have a big fall, so I never said like, oh, I'm going to be this, you know, the world's most famous whatever.
Right. But, you know, the ones that dream of being a movie star and then become a movie star, don't you think all of them are disappointed because there's aspects to it that they never pictured and it can't possibly fulfill what your fantasy?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm sure.
I mean, I'm sure parts of it that are awesome and fantastic, but... I don't know.
Wait, so I was going to get back to something. Oh, about feeling like you were you wanted to be the Nova.
Yes. That makes just sense. Wanted to be normal. I didn't want to be a sports car.
Right.
You know, I didn't want to be, I just wanted to, you know, I think it was, I just wanted to blend in.
Yeah. And did you try really hard to blend in?
Yes. Oh yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
See, I always find this interesting because I always felt, I wasn't the pretty girl. I was always the one who's kind of outside of the thing. I mean, I always had friends. So I wasn't, like you said, I wasn't a loner. I always had friends. But my friends were cool. And I was not. Decidedly not.
Now, is that just your impression?
No. Mm-mm. No.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So why did they hang out with you? Because you were funny?
Yeah. I was funny and smart and nice. But I wasn't... it's just like you're saying about the puberty thing. Like... I was super behind.
You didn't hit puberty till you were 23. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, very strange. I didn't hit puberty until Oliver was coming out of my vagina, which is weird.
That is so weird.
No,
Oliver is her son, by the way.
I should probably clarify that. He's my son.
Yeah. Actually, she had the DVD of the musical Oliver coming out of her vagina.
Out of my vagina. Yeah. And
now we understand why DVDs are shaped the way they are.
Yes. I was going to say getting to know you, but that's not Oliver.
Yeah.
But that being said, I never tried to blend in because I thought that that would be embarrassing if I tried to look like these girls who were really pretty and tried to like wear the clothes that they did.
Right.
I thought that people would laugh at me for trying.
Yeah.
So I didn't try. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like crazy individualistic, but I mean, I wore like crazy prairie skirts and hats and things that were completely not in style because I thought it would be, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like I thought it would be, I can't try to make my hair do that. Everyone will just laugh at me because I can't do it. I'm not a pretty girl. So why would I try to dress like that?
Yes. I know my place.
I know my
place. I'm going to dress for my place.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, cause Jimmy always tells me about trying to fit in and stuff and like,
What do you mean he tells you about trying to...
Like what he did. Like my husband.
I see.
Like about joining trying to join the basketball team even though he was 3'7" in his words. And like, why on earth would you do that? But I think I stopped myself from doing those things because who am I? Who am I to try to do that, you know?
Right.
So I limited myself for sure.
What are some other of the snapshots from your life, particularly early in your life, if you can think of any?
Oh, I can. Yeah. okay, so I remember, so I had a best friend, Nora, who is still my best friend.
I know Nora.
Yes, you do know Nora.
Yeah.
She was
the wedding.
Yes, she was just here. And so we've been friends since we were in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And she was always the pretty one, and I was always the goofy one. Mm-hmm. And that's a nice way of putting it. And I remember distinctly one time we were both looking in the mirror at her house, and she really did not mean this to be cruel. She really was just, I think when you're a little, I was thinking about this the other day. I think when you're girls, you say like, do you think I'm pretty? Do you think I'm pretty? I think that's the thing you do.
Mm-hmm.
And you want your friends to say yes. And I think she said something like, yeah, I don't know why everyone says your nose is so big. I don't think it's big. So that was like, that was one of those moments, those like Wonder Years moments of like, uh-huh. Okay.
Did the birds, everything turn, come on in the background?
Yes. Yes. And I was wearing paisley and butterfly collars.
Yeah.
So it was so there have been a few like that. There was also the I was just thinking about this. The same friend, this boy I really liked in grade school, who we got pretend married. That was like something you did. We had a ceremony and everything. We got pretend married. And then he pulled me over one day and told me that that he really had a crush on my friend Nora. So like that sort of thing, like throughout my entire life.
Yeah.
But I remember them very clearly.
Yeah.
They were very much made a statement.
Yeah.
And just...
Is there anything more painful than somebody you have a crush on?
It was...
Coming to you for advice for how to get together with your friend.
I mean, it was ridiculous. I was like, how does he not know that I have a crush on him?
Yeah,
like,
and they don't.
And then my reaction is always to be very gracious about it.
Mm-hmm.
And make like it's okay. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another time when I was... flash forward to like 19, I was in this improv group because that's what ugly girls do. And this tall, skinny guy was very into me in that he wanted to hang out with me. He thought I was really funny. He asked me to have a sleepover once. And I said,
inappropriate.
I said, I don't know if I'm ready for a sleepover. And he goes, no, I mean literally a sleepover. And then I went to his house and we literally slept. He never made a move on me. He never.
How old were you?
I was like 19. He was.
Oh, I thought you were a kid.
No. Oh. It's a flash forward to like when I'm 19.
Oh, okay.
So like, So, but he would jokingly call it a sleepover. But I thought that was, I assumed that was code for sex.
Yeah.
He didn't kiss me. He never did anything.
Then why have you sleepover?
I don't know to this day. And,
is he gay?
No. And I, you know, liked him.
Yeah.
And I thought, and everyone thought we were dating because we were always together.
Right.
He had no sexual interest in me, I guess. He just liked me.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was very strange. One in a long line of men who wouldn't sleep with me. Anyway, a friend of mine came to the show, who's not in the improv group. You know, she came to a show one night and he, asked me for her number when she left. And I was shocked, but my reaction was, of course, because mm-hmm. I'm the bigger person and I know my place, and my place is that boys don't like me.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm going to go in the corner in my prairie skirt.
Yeah, exactly. And be funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave him her number and then she called me and she was like, why did you give that guy my number? I think he's so creepy. And I was like, oh, I thought I was doing the nice, gregarious, gracious thing. And I thought I was being really generous.
Wow.
And so that's sort of like...
double fucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your heart is broken and you've let down a friend.
And then it was awkward because I had explained to him that she wasn't into him. And
that's
was,
one of your talents, Danielle, is that you can let down not only yourself,
yes,
but others at the same time.
And as many as I can at possible.
You're like the plate juggler of
well,
emotions.
Well, I think someone has... or plate spinner, always trying to keep the plate
that's
spinning.
Right. That's,
and moving from, I don't think plate juggling would be too entertaining. Here is a dish. Well, really, juggling's not too entertaining in and of itself. Yeah. But always trying to keep everyone happy.
Yeah.
And that was like a prime example of trying to keep everyone else happy, mm-hmm, and then fucking up everybody. Like everyone got upset.
But what else should you have done? Said, no, I'm not going to give you your number. I'm into you. I mean, who?
Well,
would,
like,
nobody,
no,
nobody
I guess I
should
have
that.
Just asked her if it was okay.
Oh, yeah.
But... Or like said, like, what is going on with you? I thought, you know,
yeah,
but I didn't ever speak my mind. So I was just like,
I think that's pretty normal. Who wouldn't? We were talking just a little bit earlier and I felt like I have to share this story. We're talking about that loving, you know, being in love with somebody or having, mm-hmm, a crush on somebody.
Yeah.
I was in sixth grade and I was in love with this girl. And I asked my friend to go ask her if because you always got to do the put the feelers out.
Yes.
Would they go out with,
yes,
me if I asked him? And so my friend went and asked her. And I remember we were at this school at night because it was floor hockey night, and the boys would play floor hockey, and the girls would hang out and watch us. And they were at the end of this corridor, and they didn't know that I was at the other end of the corridor. And I heard this girl say around her friends, and it reverbs. She said, oh, you guys, guess who wants to go out with me? Paul Gilmartin. And they all laughed.
Oh!
And I could just feel, I felt myself leave my body. Like,
oh
my God, I'm that guy.
And did you think you were that guy?
No.
Oh, you didn't.
I didn't think I was...
laughable, like...
I didn't think I was... Because I had friends and stuff.
Right.
But I... That's when it sunk home that, yes, everybody is growing, and you are this little...
And you're nerdy, kind
and
of...
This, you are this little guy. And, but that... I think stuff like that, I think on almost like on a cellular level, uh-huh. when you feel that kind of shame.
That's an imprint.
I think it really does imprint. Imprint
absolutely.
You. But I felt like I had to share that.
No,
sorry,
that's,
sorry too.
That's great / horrifying, but very relatable.
I sent you an email about yes. the doing the fear off.
Yes.
And do you feel game to try?
Sure.
Try
and
do that
first.
Yeah, and you know what I'm going to do for this one? I at the start of our interview, I sent out a tweet saying that I'm going to do a fear off with Danielle, and since I've revealed 99% of my fears
right.
on previous episodes, I don't
right.
want to repeat them.
Right.
So I thought it'd be fun to have people that follow me on Twitter send in their fears, and so you'll be competing against their fears.
Okay.
And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's MentalPod, MENTALPOD. And I think I might start doing this for every episode and see how that goes.
You could just start making up fears.
That's true.
Fear of exposed light bulbs, for instance.
Lazy Sunday Girl says, I'm terrified at the thought of dating while sober without having alcohol to help let my guard down.
She's fucked up.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
Okay. I am afraid of not living up to my potential, as I said earlier.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chromadile says, I'm a ridiculous person to behold, and whenever I've felt good about how I look, I've actually looked idiotic. And I believe that's the guy that does our website. His name is Stee. Stee Grieve, and I want to give him a shout out.
Okay.
For go ahead.
All right. I am afraid of my son inheriting my depression.
Okay. Seb Watt says, I'm afraid that I will say a fear that relates to someone that follows me and they will realize that.
Okay. I'm afraid of hurting people's feelings.
Okay. Chromadile, Stee again, says, I'm afraid by having a job that requires me to sit in front of a computer for all day, I've robbed myself of a fulfilling life.
Oh, God. That's a good one.
This episode is sponsored by When Breath Becomes Air. When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi is the exquisitely observed memoir of an idealistic young neurosurgeon attempting to answer the question, what makes a life worth living, as he deals with his own terminal cancer diagnosis. It's a stunning reminder to live while we are alive, a must-read for anyone in medicine, from a doctor-turned-patient. For healthcare workers, expand your view on patient care and the fragile beauty of our mortal lives through Kalanithi's unforgettable words. Some of the questions Kalanithi wrestles with in this book include, what makes life worth living in the face of death? What do you do when the future flattens out into a perpetual present? When the future is no longer a ladder towards your goals in life? What does it mean to have a child, to nurture a new life as another fades away? When Breath Becomes Air is a number one New York Times bestseller, Pulitzer Prize finalist, and named one of the best books of the year by the New York Times Book Review, People, NPR, The Washington Post, Slate, and more. When Breath Becomes Air is available wherever books are sold. Learn more at prh.com/breath.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I'm afraid of rodents.
Dylan Wise says, I have a fear that someone will rub styrofoam on my teeth.
Oh, that's good.
Awesome. I like that.
I am afraid of not being liked.
Ryan Knorr says, I have a fear that I'll never find a career I enjoy that also pays the bills.
Mm. I am afraid I will never find the proper balance between work and motherhood.
Seth D. Wright says, I'm afraid that I will never find a girlfriend again.
Oh, I'm afraid for Seth too. No, I am afraid of, oh God, I know they're there. I'm afraid I'm doing everything wrong as a parent.
Churistina says, I'm afraid that every day I drive over this really long bridge and I think I'm going to crash and fall.
I'm afraid of never being, that I'll never completely be comfortable with myself.
Headbug says, my current fear is that my view on love and relationships has been wrong. Well, I think that's a pretty common one.
Yeah, that's for
that,
sure.
The fear that I'm not in the right relationship.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's totally normal. I've been with the same woman for 23 years.
Oh,
and
Lord.
We love each other. We're committed to each other. Right. And I think it's just natural sometimes, especially after, like, you have an argument to think,
this is wrong.
I'm in the wrong.
This person is so different from me. What would have been?
And when I used to be depressed, I was such an asshole because I would be like, we got to get a divorce.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because when you're depressed, it's like everything becomes so dramatic.
Everything
and
is
so,
black and white. Yes.
When there's no hope, you don't think we're going to work through this.
Right.
You think my whole life is fucked and this is the reason.
Was there also... like you felt so badly about yourself that you felt, well, she's going to leave me anyway, or she deserves someone better, maybe even subconsciously, that like, I'm just gonna end this now.
Different thoughts on depending on what day it was, and I put her through hell, and God bless her for still being with me. I think, is it your turn for the next one?
Oh, yes. I'm afraid of being, well, this is ironic, but I'm afraid of being laughed at. Not laughed with, but laughed at.
Is it Harry Shearer that said comedians do comedy because they want to control when people laugh at them?
Well, that's brilliant and correct because you are trying to make the joke before someone else can.
Right.
You know, like, and there are
before you're at the end of a long hallway at floor hockey.
Before the guy in junior high calls you Pinocchio and not because you want to be a real boy.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, there was a scary boy who was really, he was alternately hitting on me and saying mean things to me. And he was really...
that was probably his way of covering up the fact that he was into you, though.
I guess, but that seems
But you don't, you're not smart enough at that age to see that's what somebody's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if insulting someone's physical appearance is ever clearly a way of... showing that you like them, but
I could see how kids could do
I guess
that,
so yeah. He was kind of like a tough kid, like he was really like kind of this is very interesting and then I'm thinking about this now because he was kind of like lower middle class and like I don't even know what his name was, but I remember I think I was sort of attracted to him in some weird way, and I think I always liked that kind of bad boy who is seemingly dumb, but you know, I have a thing for, you know, I like, you know, like a Mark Wahlberg, like I'm all over that. You know what I mean? Like,
sure, he's got a 13-inch cock. How can you not be into
sure?
That? It's prosthetic, but
yeah.
Is it
I think it's your turn.
Okay. I like this one. Jimsky says, the two things I'm most afraid of now are, one, losing this job, and two, keeping this job.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. I'm afraid I'll never get another job again. I always worry about that.
Mm-hmm. Dr. West Anthony says, I'm afraid that I'll spend the rest of my life alone and unloved as I am right now. Oh,
God. You won't, hopefully.
No. I'm sure there are people that love you. You just don't know it.
Right. He probably means in a singular relationship.
Yeah.
I am afraid my... Oh, I kind of said this before, but I'm afraid that... I just have so many fears about my son. I fear for him not being happy. I fear for him making the same, that's what it is. I fear for him making the same mistakes I made.
That's just funny that you say that. Cheesecake says, or Cheesecake, I'm not sure how you pronounce this, the fear that I'll die and my son will be left alone with nobody who understands the weird way his mind works.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness.
By the way, you're doing a hell of a job. Yeah, I mean, I mean, you're fighting against... multiple people. Kudos to you.
And my fears.
Rampant fear.
I just wanted to say this. I know I'm breaking for a second. And part of that is so I am stalling. But I recently saw Albert Brooks at the bookstore. He was signing copies mm-hmm. of his book and giving a speech. And someone asked him about where he got the idea of defending your life. Was it just... I'm sure you're familiar with defending your life, right?
Love it.
Yeah. Was it just like a reaction to all those feel-good, you know, heaven movies or whatever? Mm-hmm. He said, well, really what it's about, which I always thought is, really it's just about fear and how fear rules your life. Because mm-hmm. all the things that are flashback are like things he didn't do or things he didn't say. And so I was like, that's what's so brilliant about him is like that's yeah. such a common, I don't know, to me it's yeah. very relatable. Yes. It's yeah. I'm just...
Nobody, to me, plays insecurity better than him.
Oh,
he is
brilliant.
The funniest.
Yeah.
Funny. Steve Martin, as funny as he is never funny to me as the guy getting shit on. He's always
not really
funny.
Vulnerable.
No, yeah. he's funny being the guy who's an arrogant douche
yes,
that
yes,
doesn't
he
know he's
that
a
really
douche.
Well. You that's
know?
Fun. That's
but,
an interesting. Yeah,
but
yeah.
Albert Brooks is just, oh my God.
He's the loser, but yeah. It was funny because when I was a kid and I saw Broadcast News, which is one of my favorite movies.
Maybe the best movie ever made.
Yeah. My perspective on life then was I didn't understand why Holly Hunter didn't pick him.
Right.
I was like, he's so great. He's
That's
so,
what makes the movie
he's
so awesome.
So funny and he's so smart. But as I got older, I was like, oh, he's fucking annoying. I mean, he's still smart and funny, but he's no.
He's needy.
She shouldn't have picked him. He's yes. needy and selfish and annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so it was interesting. Like,
it's the greatest
like
movie.
I don't think anyone was supposed to think he was
right.
the one that got away. But in my right. in my perspective,
I kind of
like,
felt that way.
You
it was
did.
Like,
okay.
And yet I also know what it's like to be think that. I should be into this person, but I'm not.
Oh, yes.
And why am I into this other person?
Oh, who, I punished myself so much for not yeah. being into. The few boys who were interested in me were yeah. always super nerdy or super mm-hmm. not at my alley, and I would chastise myself. Why can't I just be?
Yeah.
Why can't I be like the person who likes me? And
yeah.
but I just and then I realized, oh, you just can't.
Yeah.
You can't make yourself do That's, something like that. And,
yeah,
yeah.
You have no control over what you're into.
Yeah,
that, just like what the first right. thought that pops into your head, you have no control over that. You have control over whether or not you let it sit there and
right.
linger.
Right.
But
yeah. Okay, I got another one.
All right, go.
Oh wait, I just forgot because
I'll do one.
Yeah,
that will
totally
make everybody completely
okay.
depressed.
Got it.
Being alone after my mother, who has leukemia, dies. And that's the show, everybody.
Yay, leukemia.
Now, thank you for the person that did that for being brave enough to tweet something so personal and painful.
Oh, my God.
That was from LJCD.
Okay, I remembered mine, and it's very self-involved, but I'm afraid that I have not had an impact on anyone.
Oh, God, that is one that I so relate to.
You do, okay.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And that I will die and will have not been special.
Yes. Yes, which I'm sure many people think.
And I think a lot of artists, I think that's what drives us.
Exactly. You want to leave some sort of mark. But I don't even mean like, I mean on people I know.
Mm-hmm.
Like so I have this friend who I've had since I was six and we're, you know, very close. And I was visiting her recently. She lives up north. And she has a little boy too. And her husband mentioned something about how their son has a godfather. They don't call it a godfather, but he has a godfather. I said, oh, okay. And then he said, yeah, he has 12 godparents.
What?
And I was floored because I'm not one of them. So I was like, Sue, he literally has a dozen godparents,
wow.
and I'm not one of them. I mean, this is my best friend since I was 6 years old.
Wow.
So, and like each godparent was because something they could pass along to their son or something they could help them with. So the only conclusion to take from that is that I have nothing of value to impart on their son. I don't know how else you could possibly interpret that. And I did jokingly sort of passive-aggressively bring it up with her mm-hmm. because I didn't know how not to bring it up. And I said, so I guess I shouldn't be offended that I'm not one of the 12 mm-hmm. godparents.
Good for you for
yeah.
saying that.
And she kind of tried to answer. She was super uncomfortable. And we didn't really resolve it because I was uncomfortable too because mm-hmm. I am uncomfortable with confrontation. And especially with friends, I can have confrontation with, you know,
yeah.
the guy on the phone anytime. But like friends, so I actually do think it's something I have to talk to her about because
yeah.
it's like, well, you've just given me a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
You've just told me that I don't rank. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that. And right. it really has made me think, like, do, like, when I hear friends talking about, oh, my friend told me this, or my mm-hmm. my friend said to look at it this way, I'm like, does anyone ever do that about me? Does anyone ever say, well, Danielle said, and like take it to heart and it means something? I know that's like the definition of self-involved, but I, you know, you want to matter. You want to yeah. have an influence mm-hmm. or an impact on someone's life and not yes. just feel like you're just there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah. oh. I don't know who that wouldn't fuck up that, yeah. that feeling, but I can tell you that, that you do matter in people's lives. And I know that sounds cheesy for me to say that because, you know, yeah. Carla and I have been friends with you for
yeah.
a long time. And, so you're not one of those people that you're like, oh, we got to go see Danielle. No, you're a fun person to be around.
I know, and you're, but I just feel like I'm periphery. Do you know what yeah. I mean? Like, I'm glad I'm a fun person to be around, but is right. that it? Like, I feel like, is that all that it, I'm just someone who makes...
Do we ever get the answer to that, though?
Right.
Well, I don't know if we ever get to the right. answer to that.
I think some friends show you and yeah. you feel it.
Yeah.
And I do feel that from mm-hmm. my friends, yeah. but... You know, I realized a long time ago that you have different friends for different things.
Yeah.
Some friends are great to hang out with mm-hmm. and just have fun. But that's basically as far as it goes. Some friends are your, you know, person you dump everything on and tell everything yeah. to. Yeah. And I guess sometimes I just worry, like, am I only the peripheral friend? Like, what slot do I fill in these people's lives?
Right.
Like... If you're just filling a slot in my life, what slot am I filling in your life? Right. Is it a yeah. valuable place mm-hmm. or is it just a placeholder? Is it just someone you like to have
Am I the seat holder at the
yeah.
Oscars?
Yeah, exactly.
Or am I, right. or am I,
am
one
I
of
the cardboard cutout?
Right.
Really? Like, yeah. yeah.
I think so, that's a pretty normal fear, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. But yeah. it's...
But that would fuck anybody up, I would think.
Yeah, I was yeah. really upset about it.
But you know what? Maybe it'll be a chance for you, and maybe this is me just being too nauseatingly positive, but maybe this will be a chance for you guys to take your relationship to another level.
No, I think so, and I actually am looking forward to it. It's just, it's one of those things that can't be done on the phone or through email, yeah. so I have to wait till I see her
again. It's
got to
be done in the ring.
Yeah, oh, for sure, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Bare fists.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's one of those things. And she actually called me yesterday, and so that was really nice. But yeah. in the back of my head, I had this thing going on in the back of my head.
Like, was I the 13th call?
No, but like, is she calling because she feels she should call?
Right.
You know, she should check up. Mm-hmm. She should check in with me.
Yeah.
I just, you know.
But you know, the reality is most relationships are messy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to avoid messes, I think you're never going to get close to people because I think intimacy is based on being comfortable with imperfection.
Yes.
And yeah. imperfect, uncomfortable things and just being patient and mm-hmm. working through them mm-hmm. and being open to it working out however it works out. Mm-hmm. But for a control freak and a perfectionist.
Yeah. It's hard. Like I have no problem in my marriage
yeah.
to... point out problems
yeah.
and no problem dealing with it. But
that's because we have to live with that person
yeah.
though. And we're
right.
We think everything that they do, it's multiplied by 500 because we think, oh, that habit is going to be in this house the rest
yes.
of my life.
Yes.
I got to nip this in the
right,
bud right,
right
now.
Right, right.
Whereas with a friend, you know, they say something.
Right. Yeah.
And you're like, I see him once a year.
Or like I let things go because I don't. You know, or even like with my brother, it's like I never really talked to him about how I felt about our relationship. Mm-hmm. Do I regret that? I don't even know if I do because I don't know that it would have gotten anywhere and it may right. have just been made things more uncomfortable. And mm-hmm. But I'm not saying that life should be about avoiding discomfort, but sometimes mm-hmm. I guess sometimes it is. But yeah, I just had this other friend visit, and the whole time I felt like my heart, like my chest tightened, like I wanted to break through to some other level. And I do often feel this way.
This
with
is
her.
The friend with the 12.
No, this is this is a different,
totally different friend.
This is a different friend.
What did you felt like your relationship was superficial and you wanted it to be deeper?
It's not quite that it's superficial. It's more that I don't know. I just feel like something is we're very, again, this is someone I grew up with. So we're different now, you know, mm-hmm. and we lead totally different lives. And like, for instance, she doesn't care at all about my career or anything to do with show business, which is fine. She cares about me. But I kept having this debate in myself, like, well, shouldn't she care somewhat? Shouldn't she ask me about my life? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't she? But if she doesn't, she doesn't. So what am I going to, what am I going to accomplish by telling her, gee, I really wish you were interested in this.
Yeah.
You know, right. But so it was this kind of like back and forth in my head. Mm-hmm. And we were never alone because she had family with her. So we were never alone. So that also became like there's a wall here.
Right. Right.
So, and then I feel like, oh, I'm a child because I need something more from, you know, a 35-year-old relationship. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like needy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? I don't know. It's interesting. I always say to my therapist, you know, I thought something catastrophic happened in my life, like my brother killing himself, everything would change and I would be released of the burdens of, I know that's a little kooky, but like, oh, you get a new perspective on life. So you let go of your fears and none of that happened.
Easier said than done. Yeah.
I just thought, none of that happened. So it was almost disappointing. Like, well, what the hell is going to take me out of my... Mm-hmm. Habits that I don't like about myself or my
maybe it just happens slowly.
Yeah.
Carl and I were at a coffee place the other day, and we saw I'm not kidding you, maybe a 100-foot stretch Hummer.
Oh God!
And I wanted to go to him and knock on the window and say, "Hey." on September 11th of 2001, two planes crashed into a building. I'm just assuming you guys haven't heard.
Ah! That's hysterical.
It's just people that, it's like, are you not aware that we are around the world fighting because there's a limited amount of oil?
So you're just going to...
And you just don't give a shit. But, you know, sometimes I think people, you get stuff when you get stuff, but I'm always so much less patient with other people getting things than I am with myself.
It seems so clear to you.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why don't they just do that? Yeah. Why don't they just change that?
And I don't think there's any character defect more embarrassing to confront about yourself than being needy. I had this really embarrassing moment about 10 years ago. I was with a friend, and we were, I think it was in that movie, wasn't there a movie called like Needful Things or something?
Sounds
came out.
Vaguely familiar.
There was a movie that had some type of title like that.
Okay.
And I cracked. I said, oh, is this movie about my mom?
Uh-huh.
And this person said, your mom, what about you?
Oh my God.
And I just was
my God.
Suddenly hit me. Oh my God. And so I, like, for the next 2 years, everything I did, I looked at, I was like, is this being, and I began to truly see how needy I was and how, you know.
But did you, so were you happy that that person said that or?
Ultimately yes. Yeah. But for the first 2 years, I was like embarrassed.
Of course.
You know.
Oh my God. Well, that's the other thing I think. It's like you don't ever really tell your friends exactly. I mean, maybe some relationships are like this, but you don't tell them exactly what you think of them.
Right.
And so that's been ruminating in my head. Like, so what do they think of me? So what do they, you know?
Right.
I mean, I wish I could just get that fucking thing out of my head about you.
What do I mean to my friends?
What do I mean and what do people think of me and why the fuck should I care what other people think of me? But like I said, I don't have that. Mm-hmm. I don't give a fuck gene. So I do care. Like, I really care. I can't pretend I don't. And
you know what would be cool? I don't know. Maybe people listening, you can send me some ideas for how to do this, but maybe there would be a way for us to have something where we say something about friends of ours that we've never told them on the website.
Like anonymously, you mean?
Yeah, anonymously, or just post post something. Maybe we go to the forum and you say, here's my name, here's the name of my friend, and here is what I love about this person. And then send your friend that link.
Oh, that's
Wouldn't
lovely.
That be nice
for- I assumed you meant something negative. No. Initially. That's lovely.
Because I think sometimes we don't take time out during the day to. And in the last couple of years, I've started doing this. I've started telling friends of mine, I love you. Here's what I love about you. I did that for my mom about 2 years ago. I wrote her a letter. Because, you know, I can get so trapped in what my mom did that I think was wrong or, you know, and every parent, I think, does that, you know, makes mistakes and you resent it for a certain while. But then I looked at all the things that my mom did that was nice, and I thought, she's getting older. I want her to know these things. And so I wrote this big, long list of things that I am grateful that she did for me, and I sent it to her. And I think
she really
liked it, so...
I'm sure.
Maybe we should do that for people close to us. Even if they do things that annoy us.
Yeah. Right.
Because nobody's perfect.
No.
I'm fucking close, but
I know. I know. You're almost there.
Yeah.
I had to say this because we were just talking about being needy, and I just flashed on this today or yesterday that when I used to, oh god, it's so embarrassing. But when I used to go out with guys, which was not a long history at all, but I would always make them tell me what they liked about me.
Mm-hmm. I so get that.
I wanted to make sure that they were liking me for the right reason. Right. And of course I wanted my ego strokes, but I really it was very important. Like, and that seems so childish now when I think about it, like that's so crazy.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, tell me. Like, I remember telling Jimmy, tell me what it is you like about me. Like, I have to make sure that,
I was going to say that's such a 20-year-old girl thing to do, but then I realized when you started dating Jimmy, you were in your 30s.
No, I was in my 20s.
Were you?
I was 24 when I started dating him.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Has it been that long?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No. I was, no.
Well, then I think that's all right. You're so insecure in your teens and 20s. In 30s and 40s.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. Let's just finish the fear off.
Oh, I'm
There's
sorry.
A couple more. No, that's all right.
Fear off. Okay.
I'll do one. I don't remember whose turn it was, but I'm going to do one. This is from Cradigus. Running out of smokes before payday. Hey, that's a good honest one.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Regrets. I'm afraid of having regrets.
Mm-hmm. Sufi Lizard, nice name. Primary current fear is failure, followed closely by my fear of success.
I was going to say, those two are usually.
Mm-hmm. If you can hang on for just a little bit longer, you might win.
What?
You might beat.
Oh, really?
You might beat the Twitterers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
The list is almost done.
I didn't realize that this was a competition. Had you told me that?
Oh, everything's a competition.
Everything in my life is a competition.
What is worth doing unless there's a winner and a loser,
Danielle?
I
completely agree with that 100%. I'm worried I won't instill the right values in my son.
That's good. Too late. kidding, of course. He's a lovely, lovely kid. This one comes from Leo67. One of my children dying before I do. Oh, that's so sweet,
God.
And yet really bums me out and brings the show down.
I don't even think I let myself go there.
Yeah,
I'm afraid I'm not well-informed enough.
Mm-hmm. Barry Fye, getting into a gnarly car accident.
Early?
Getting into a gnarly.
Oh, gnarly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Apparently his surfboard is strapped to the top of
it. Yeah, He's tweeting from 1982.
I like how I asked people to tweet and now
and then
I'm
shitting
on them.
That's my fault because that's my I started you doing that. I'm afraid of being called out on an embarrassing personality trait.
This ambivalence tweets, not finding something in my life I can really dedicate myself to.
Boy. I might be running out here. I think I'm done.
God, we
beat
you.
Am I so close?
And we had one left.
Oh, crap.
I guess I have to do it to win.
For
actually,
sure.
Two left because somebody just tweeted another one. Second to last one from Tardy's Pilot, being laid off from my job. And are you done? Are you out?
Wait, I think I had one. Afraid of not being seen as my own person.
That's a good one. And this is the last one. So if you can think of one after this, you will be the victor.
Okay.
This is from The Bailey, And she says that, I am afraid that I will outlive my husband, who I am crazy about.
Oh.
That's a sweet one.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Wow. Okay, I am afraid. I don't know if this counts or if this is too much like the other things I've said. But I am afraid that my son is going to have a hard life ahead of him for being small. Mm.
You win.
Yeah, Danielle I do. Koenig. I do. I win.
Danielle Koenig, ladies and gentlemen.
Yay!
I was small, and he does.
But you got big. He won't get big.
I don't know about that. You're not small.
I'm 5'2.5".
You're small.
Yeah.
Good luck to him.
Thank you. Yeah.
But he's adorable.
He is adorable, and hopefully that'll carry him somewhat.
And he's got funny parents.
Yes, and he's already pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is. Yes. And he did something the other day that scared the crap out of me. Mm. I got hurt. Oh, we were playing. The three of us were playing. And I got hurt or something. Oh, I bumped my head on the... I walked into a doorknob. Okay, Paul, I walked into a doorknob. No, yeah. I bumped my head on the bookcase behind me. And he started doing a funny dance.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, what are you doing? And he said, I'm trying to make you laugh. That's what I do when you get hurt. I try to make you laugh. And I was like, oh, shit. Oh, no.
It's genetic.
Oh, no. He's literally like dancing around trying to make me laugh. That's what I do when your daddy get hurt. I dance around. I'm like, oh, fuck. No.
That's how I break the silence at the dinner table. I tap dance.
Jimmy tells a story. One time, Jimmy was trying to get the trash out of the trash can and there was glass in it. And because I put the glass there, because that's, I thought, what you do when something breaks, you put it in the trash can. Anyway, it ended up slicing the bag. He hurt his finger and he yelled and said, like, who the fuck would do this? And got like really mad. And Oliver literally started fixing the house, like pretending that he was hammering the house and fixing it. And I was like, do you see what is happening? He's literally trying to repair things. I was like, this is perfect. Oh, Igvald.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What are any recurring and negative thoughts that you have towards yourself?
Not smart enough. Not funny enough. Not worldly enough. Not pretty enough. Not... I really beat myself up that I don't seem to have hobbies. I don't have other interests. I'm not good at, like, there's nothing I'm good at that's like a, like, you have your wood carving, I don't know what you do.
Nothing I hate more than wood carving. I do woodworking, yeah.
Don't you make beavers out of, like, you whittle, don't you? Did you sit on your porch and whittle? That's how I picture it.
And a whistle.
And whistle. Like, I can't garden. I can't cook. I can't, like, I don't, and I constantly sort of beat myself up that I don't have an outside thing that I've taught myself or learned or it's just like comedy. Like, that's all I seem to have. I mean, I like reading and I like movies and that sort of thing, but I don't have like a passion outside of my professional thing. So that bothers me.
So you feel like your life is too small?
Yeah. I feel like my life is too small, and also that I must not be interesting if I don't have that. I must not be valuable and well-rounded and deep.
And by the way, all of these are off base, but I'm not stopping you because it would just... The show would be 3 hours long.
Oh, okay.
For me to go, you're crazy. You're crazy.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
You know, I'm letting you go on. Because the listeners now know at this point that all of these things that people say are 99% myths made up in their head. And I'm not being a dick by going, Danielle.
No. I'm not a good enough daughter, good enough mother, good enough wife. I think I'm a pretty good friend. Apparently not worthy of being one of 12. A dozen.
Yeah.
12.
Well, if you could
10 plus 2.
If you could have started recognizing SeaWorld signs earlier in your life, maybe things would have worked out.
I'm sure everything would have turned around. Yeah. That I'm not sharp enough or that I'm not... definitely the fact that I'm not confident you know, that bothers me. I've definitely made huge strides throughout my life in that sense, but it bothers me that I care what people think. It absolutely bothers me. I wish I could just be... But I also worry that I don't exactly know who I am supposed to be. Like, I see... I have, you know, friends with all these different personalities, and I think, well, am I supposed to be like that, or is my natural inclination to be more like that, and I've just changed myself, or I just constantly compare myself to everyone and anything and everyone in every situation.
It's so draining.
And it's so draining and stupid, and it makes me so mad at myself that I do that, because I do have a nice life, and I am a good person, and I have a wonderful husband and a wonderful son, but why does everyone's life seem better by comparison, or... they did the more interesting thing, or,
you know, there's a survey on this on the website for this podcast. The website is mentalpod.com, and there's a survey you can take, and one of the questions, there's about 25 questions I ask of people, and one of the questions is negative recurring thoughts that you have towards yourself and emotions that you have, and at the top of them, the most common one that people have is that they feel that they're not doing enough, and that procrastination is a huge thing with them. And I think if that's such a common thing, maybe we are doing enough, and we just think everybody else is doing, doing better.
Absolutely, I'm constant. Like, my friend who is a mom and is a lawyer / judge and goes to ballet or goes to a dance class 3 times a week. And I can't not compare myself to her. Yeah. And if I am taking a nap, then I am a bad person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, do I know that feeling? And it's totally wrong, because I think being good to yourself, being gentle with yourself is so, so important.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I'll say to myself, you know what? I'm just going to be good to myself today. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have ice cream. Right. I'm going to take a nap.
Right.
And the world isn't going to end.
Yes.
And I can still be productive tomorrow.
Yes.
And those are really nice days when I have them. So,
right. It is a little present to yourself, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it's hard to get over.
In fact, I think it's even better than nothing wrong with it. I think it's really important because you got to put that whip down. You got to put that whip down, because we think sometimes the whip is our way of good discipline, but it's not.
Right.
It's a way of chipping away at our self-esteem, and it's...
I wonder not physiological, but what is like the biological, or what is the reason that people are inclined to be self-critical and insecure? Why is that a survival method of some sort?
I do. I think it's evolutionary, because those are the people that created the most stuff and built the cave that allowed you to survive in. The people that couldn't sit still.
Mm-hmm.
It was a survival mechanism, but I think it's become not as useful anymore now that immediate survival isn't as important.
Right. So your angst goes into it.
Yeah, I think that feeling that I've got to be constantly doing to be okay, it served us early on in our evolution, but I think it's actually degrading our quality of life now.
I don't know. Jimmy Dore has a funny joke about the guy who built the St. Louis Bridge. Like, how pissed off was he at his dad? Like, that's what makes you do the great things, is that you're trying to prove it to someone, or trying to improve, you know.
Right.
You know, it's all like justifying yourself. But it just, I mean, obviously everyone's insecure, and people just deal with it in different ways, and some people become assholes because that's how they deal with it. But it doesn't serve any function.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, I don't know. I don't know if it, maybe it does serve a function, but it just seems, it's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And like, my whole life I was supposedly training to be a ballet dancer, and I just wasn't good enough.
Mm.
And I still have incredibly mixed feelings about ballet. I don't go to the ballet. It still hurts to see it, because it's something I didn't achieve. Like, I can't appreciate it on its own, because it's like,
you can't
saying,
separate your own feelings of inadequacy from it.
Yeah. That also had a huge impact on my life, was being involved in something where you're supposed to look perfect, you know, be incredibly feminine, and work really hard. And I did work really hard, and it still didn't happen. So it angers me so much when I hear people say, you could be anything you want to be, like, to their kids. It infuriates me, because no, you can't. there are certain things you're going to be good at, certain things you're not going to be good at. And to give someone the impression you could be president of the United States, well, maybe you can't.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't have that brain, but that's okay.
Yeah.
It just cut to me saying to Oliver, you could be anything.
So what should you say to kids? You can try anything you want to try?
Well, what I say to Oliver, I mean, he's only 3 and a half, so it's not like it hasn't. But I say, like, I just said it last night, like, some people are good at some things and some people are good at other things. I said, like, mommy's a really good dancer, but mommy can't sing, you know, that kind of thing. And because he'll say, like, I'm the best at this. And I said, yeah, you're really good at this. And I don't point out what he's not good at, but if he says I'm not good at
I'll
something.
I'll do that.
Yeah. If he says, like, I'm not good at it. Oh, that's the other thing, is he's already, like, being hard on himself, which is, you know, my MO. So I'm a little bit worried about that. Add that to your list of fears. But, no, I will say I'm hopefully not going to say, no, you're great, you're great. I'm hopefully going to say, maybe you weren't great at that, but that's okay, because it's impossible to be good at everything.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
And it hurts to not be good at something. But when everyone was telling me, you're great, you can do anything, and then I didn't, what choice is there to feel but you've disappointed everyone?
Right.
You didn't live up to your potential. You are a failure. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's setting someone up for...
Which is a terrible thing to be told in a birthday card.
I know, right?
Awful. I can't believe
year
they even made that...
Year?
I can't believe they would even print that birthday card.
I probably had the peanuts on it.
Yeah, and the fact that it had your name on it was like, wow, everybody knows.
Spelled the right way and everything.
So body image was a big source of anxiety.
Absolutely.
I would imagine for any girl.
I think it's for every girl. But definitely being in ballet when you're in a leotard and tights every day and you're literally comparing yourself to other people every single day. But I wasn't... I think that came later.
Did you ever grow out of your body image issues?
Well,
do you still have them?
Yeah. I'm definitely not to the same extent.
Right.
But, well, I don't know if I can say that's true. I actually just talked to my therapist about this the other day because I foolishly got on a scale and I was more than I usually am. I'm a very small person. I recognize that. I'm not saying I'm fat. Don't think I'm one of those people. But it was a number. And it was a number that I wasn't happy with. And my whole day was ruined. And I instantly went back to that time of weighing myself every day and... And, you know, again, it's something you failed at. It's, I didn't do the best I could.
Right.
I let myself down. You know, and it's a number. It's stupid.
Did you ever make yourself throw up?
Oh, yeah. As I like to say, I dabbled in bulimia. But I never had a taste for it. I did. I definitely did that.
When did that start and when did it end?
I would say probably...
Started at 12, ended about 1 o'clock.
Yeah. No, I think it started probably in like 10th grade or so and on and off for just a few years. I never did anything to... It's interesting. I don't have an addictive personality, so I never did it to excess. I never like was someone who was doing it every day. If I felt particularly guilty or something, then I would do it. And I don't know why I stopped, but I did. It wasn't, I didn't need an intervention or anything. And my parents don't know I did it, I don't think. I mean, I've joked about it in my act, so maybe they've heard it, but it was, you know, I mean, I have friends who are, you know, super committed to it. That would probably be another thing I would denigrate myself about, because I wasn't committed enough to bulimia. You know, I wasn't like, I didn't have the presence of mind to really like dedicate to focus on it.
Maybe you should have gone to bulimia school.
I know. But I did, you know, just like not eat properly. And so I definitely have an issue with denying myself. Like I don't like to deny myself food, which is a problem because you have to at some point, but I don't count calories or anything like that.
Well, I'm going to wrap up here, and there's two things that I want to do. I'm going to read a...
Please don't say poem.
Too late. I'm going to... One of the things I like to do is we have the survey I told you about on the website. And I think I might start for each episode just kind of randomly pick somebody's survey and read some things about it to close the show with. So I'm going to do that in just a moment. But before we do that, I'm going to say say goodbye to you and tell you what I love about you.
My gosh, I'm going to blush.
I love that you are funny, that you're open, and you're honest, and you're a good friend, and you're fun to converse with.
Well, thank you. The feeling is very mutual, and I had a great time doing this. I actually wasn't anxious about doing it. I was actually very excited. I like talking about myself.
Yeah.
Who doesn't, right? Yeah. So thank you, Paul. I really had a
And I really appreciate you talking about stuff that I know was painful for you to talk about, but I think there are going to be some people that will feel comforted and feel less alone by what you had to say.
I have to say, and I know we're trying to wrap this up, but when my brother died, I was shocked at how many people have been touched by suicide. I was really, really surprised. I didn't know it was that common of a thing. And it's just my parents and I both were like, oh my God, this is crazy. But it does help to hear other people talk about it, I hope. I mean, it helps me.
Yeah.
You know, every situation is different, but.
Yeah. Is there anything in closing, if somebody is in a situation that you were in that has somebody close to them that took their life, is there anything that you would like to say to them?
Well, this might offend some people, and it might,
it's okay,
or it might sound like I'm color coding, but I honestly believe, at least for my brother's case, and again, this was someone who had dealt with this his whole life and who thought it out and planned it, I honestly think that, I'm not saying it was the right thing to do, and obviously I don't want my brother to be dead. Obviously not. But I do think it was a relief for him. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, God, this is going to sound like I'm pro-suicide or something. I'm not. I'm just saying, just take some comfort in the fact that maybe someone is in so much pain, in so much pain, that they did what they needed to do. They didn't do it to hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did it because they just didn't want to feel that pain anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish to God he had stayed on the meds. I don't know. I cannot say with 100% certainty that that would have helped. Mm-hmm. I know for a lot of people it does. And, it, you know, or people who've never gotten help, obviously they should take those. My stomach's making noises. I'm hungry. They should take those steps.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you can't feel guilty. I mean, you will, because there's no way not to feel guilty. But I've sort of accepted that this was, this is going to sound so corny, and I'm not even 100% sure I believe it, but like that this was his path. Like whatever anyone did, this is what was going to happen in his case.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you shouldn't try to help people. I mean, I'm sure it's not like everyone is beyond help, of course. When I hear about like these teenagers, that's what kills me, is these teenagers. I'm like, you have no idea what a small part of your life this is.
Yeah.
Like, it's shocking. That's what's
such
so shocking
to me.
Such
a little data on your life and who you are has come in yet, and you are making such a rash decision.
It's just, that's the stuff that kills me. Your life is just not even started. Like, yes, these things affect us and we're going to have insecurities for the rest of our lives because of what happened in high school or whatever, but I'm babbling.
Well, let's agree on this. Anybody over 90, you've had enough data. You want to kill yourself, go ahead.
You know if you're a schmuck.
Well, actually, we might even swing by and
help you. Right.
We might help you.
Sure. But no, it's just, and I don't think people understand their value. Certainly, my brother didn't.
And
certainly,
and you can't see it when you're in that spiral of depression.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for being my friend, and for being honest.
Thank you.
If you're out there and you're stuck, don't give up hope. We may not have the answers on this show. We probably don't. But I do know this, is that we have felt like you feel, and know that you are not alone.
And it does always get better.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. You just got to be patient. So thanks for listening. And as I mentioned before, we're going to take it out with reading somebody's survey from the website. And This comes from Ashtray Monument. That's a nickname he gave himself. He's 21 to 30 years old. He's never touched drugs or alcohol. He believes that if there's a person, place, or thing keeping him from being happy, he wrote, mostly it boils down to myself, but I feel like I'm trapped by my job and that leaving it would be a horrible mistake, even though it makes me miserable. My weight and appearance makes me sick to the point where I make a point of it not to have pictures of myself, look at myself in the mirror, etc. His defining mood is shame. His defining obsessive thought is that life has passed him by. His primary activity is procrastinating. What makes him angry is, he says, I don't even know where to begin. Happy people, attractive people, successful people, rich people. The feeling of being unable to control my destiny and my job. And to the question, if there is a God, what are some things you would say to God? He says, sorry, I don't believe in your existence, but can you blame a fella? Look, I didn't really do anything to help, but I certainly didn't do anything to hurt either. If it's true that you had a plan, I'm not really impressed. Who farted? Sorry, I can't think of anything legitimate to say to you. All I can think of are tacky one-liners. Thanks for listening.